secrets anymore.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm. We bring in our producer, Jason Gibbs. Gibbs!
Yes, sir.
How you doing, man?
I'm enjoying this. It's a nice festive Wednesday.
It is a festive Wednesday. And again, you can tweet your questions using the hashtag AskCBD. We'll go in the mailbag in this hour as well. I want to say this, though. Shout out to ESPN bringing in Craig Sager.
That's awesome.
Bravo. To be a part of Game 6 as the sideline reporter.
Never had the opportunity because the finals aren't on TNT.
Yeah.
Very, very classy move by ESPN. And Doris Burke, very classy as well to step aside a little bit. You know, I don't know.
I was going to mention Doris Burke. Are you guys a fan of Doris Burke being
a
sideline reporter of the finals?
How can you hate Doris?
She's okay.
Doris knows her stuff. She's a good people.
Okay. I didn't ask you if she knows her stuff. I just said, are you a fan of it?
I think she's good at what she does.
Okay.
I don't have any issues. Kind of an awkward pause. Let's go around the league.
Let's go.
Number one.
What do you think of Nate Robinson's attempt to play football, gentlemen? If you haven't heard, trying out for the Seattle Seahawks and Pete Carroll at minicamp this week.
I get Terrell Pryor. After an opportunity to play quarterback in the NFL and it fizzling out, wanting to make a position change and play wide receiver, which, as we know firsthand, is going well but took a while to do so. I think it's a publicity stunt. As you look at rosters, and I know the Seattle Seahawks roster has changed slightly, you know, over the last couple of years via free agency and the retirement of Marshawn Lynch, but that is a very difficult team to make because of how competitive and their expectations so high in their window with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and that defense. That a guy can just play another sport and want to come in and think it's that easy. I think it's a publicity stunt, and I don't like it.
Does it say in the articles about it, Gibbs, what position he's attempting to play?
Let me take a look here.
Left out.
That's usually a baseball.
So here's my question, Wilhelm. How well does that go over in a locker room? Because athletes respect athletes in other sports. But when you cross that line and try to think you can do what they do,
yeah,
does and that go over poorly?
It will go over fair. I think because he's from that area and, you know, playing at the University of Washington and probably he's back there an awful lot. He's probably been in and around the Seattle organization in the past. And maybe knows some of the guys, hangs out with some of the guys that are Seahawks in the offseason, you know, so on and so forth. So he might be accepted that way. But if I were a young player fighting for my chance and this guy's trying to do this and he might steal some of my reps, I'd be upset.
It's defensive back he's going out for.
Cornerback played it. He played in college.
And he did it pretty well.
According to Greg DiPerna Jr. So... we'll see. I don't see it working, but isn't there, though, there's some mutual respect. I know when, like, Brock Lesnar tried out for the Vikings, they had a lot of respect for him. He didn't end up making it because he is coming off of that diverticulitis and the motorcycle accident and all that. But I think that, I don't know. I mean, if he was trying out for the Browns, I wouldn't like it because this is a team that needs to focus on getting better, not worrying about that kind of shenanigans.
And I think the Cardinals are a bigger concern for the Seahawks
than Nate Robinson. I agree.
Number two.
Well, the number three pick in the NFL draft is already holding out. Skipping minicamp is one Joey Bosa. How bad does this make Bosa look?
I think it makes him look terrible. You know, as how many other first round guys are signed? Everybody but him? Because weren't things collectively bargained to make it easy for guys to come to camp and participate in the offseason? Don't be surprised if, you know, he'll probably get his way on offset language or whatever it is he's fighting.
It's all about Super Bowl payments and
it's, come on. I mean, watch him come in and get hurt.
You can say, I should have been the number one pick, but you weren't.
No, you weren't.
I mean, maybe is that what he's trying to do here? Is his agent going, well, he should get paid what the number one pick got paid because he was better than both those guys. They took those guys as a position of need.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. I think it's bad for that organization as you're trying to. Right now, the Chargers are the bottom dweller of that division. With the Broncos coming off a Super Bowl, the Chiefs making the playoffs, and the Raiders moving fast out of the cellar. The Chargers, and I thought Bosa was going to make a splash and solidify that defense. John Pagano was elated about the pick of Bosa, and now you get hit with this. I think, and you're trying to build a stadium and stay in San Diego. I think it just all, you know, Melvin Gordon coming off a microfracture. There are chips stacked against you, and one of the easiest chips to stack, you're screwing up.
It just doesn't seem like a smart way to start your career.
No.
It's minicamp, slotted. Man. It's not what like, are you doing?
It's not like it's the old days where you really are haggling and can kind of cut your own deal. Like, it's slotted. They're arguing over what his Super Bowl payoff would be. That's what was one of the things that I read. Like, let's worry about getting the Super Bowl.
How about
you
win your division
sweatpants.
First?
Right. Let's worry about getting back that. Right. Not picking third overall.
Yeah, let's get some new
not that
sweatpants
we're talking about
you
it,
too.
But, you know. Anyway.
We can call the kettle black.
Yeah, fine. We will. We just did.
Number three.
Question number three. By the way, there are four. I only wrote down three, but I came up with a fourth one.
Perfect.
What are the Eagles thinking by giving Fletcher Cox 6 years and $103 million?
I thought the same thing when I first saw that, and I'll be very honest and I'll share. I take pride in, of course, knowing our Cleveland Browns inside and out, but being very in tune to the AFC North and, for the most part, the high points of what's going on around the league, as you know, you want to have conversations about football. It is my profession. At first, I saw Eagles pay Fletcher Cox $103 million. I went, who's Fletcher Cox? And a little bit of that has to do, I know he's a good player. I went back and looked at it. I went, you know, what position does he play? Who's Fletcher Cox? Okay. And I think a little bit has to do with how bad the Eagles have been, you know, or kind of in disarray with Chip Kelly as their head coach. And look in that division. I don't watch a lot of NFC East football because I'm like, the Cowboys are watered down, you know.
Will this year.
And I will this year. But without Romo, they're not worth watching. I'm not a fan of the Giants. You know, I'll watch the highlights of Odell Beckham's catches, but I'm not a fan of Eli. And the Redskins, I'm not a Kirk Cousins guy. I don't like DeSean Jackson. So I have no reason to watch that division. So it kind of like was water under the bridge. And then I just looked at kind of who he is. I don't believe, and we saw it this year, that Ndamukong Suh is worth what he's worth. And I don't think Fletcher Cox will ultimately pay off. But I will say, having been a player on the negotiating side, and I've said this before, even in talking about Mitchell Schwartz, when you have an opportunity to make your money, go make your money, and I applaud you.
Absolutely. It's a short shelf life in the National Football League.
Number four.
All right, gentlemen, final question today, and it's something that Big Ben Roethlisberger said yesterday, and basically the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, Mike McCarthy, also agreed with. Ben Roethlisberger said they should go for two every time they score a touchdown. And Mike McCarthy said, I kind of agree with that.
I agree with it, too.
And Drew Brees just came out, I think it's Pro Football Talk, that said not only go for two, but go for it more on fourth down as well.
You should. That's what. Listen, if we move into more of an analytics age in the NFL, which it seems that we are, that is the way that you go. Because all you have to do is be 50% on those. And good teams are going to be better at 50% at getting 2 yards. And keeping the football is important. And you should go for it on fourth down more often than not.
Yeah. And I think I'd be interested to see success inside the three-yard line or in for teams. You know, in goal line. You can call it goal line scenarios, spread format, whatever you want to do. The success of the team getting into the end zone from the three-yard line or less.
I think the Steelers, and I'll look it up, but the Steelers' success rate last year was well over 50%.
Okay. Well, if you have a 50% chance to add those points, because I think if it's, well, it's 50-50, say you miss the first, you get the second, it's still 14 points.
All right, here you go. You ready?
Ready.
The Steelers only did it 11 times, but they converted 8 of them, so that's 72.7%. The next most were the Packers, who did it 6 times and converted 4, 66.7%. So if they feel that they can maintain those paces, they're absolutely benefiting by going for two every time.
And I think even furthermore, getting into the, you know, the schematics of the game and game planning, for that matter, is if you feel like you've got a plan down inside at that 3-yard line that you're supremely confident in, and you feel like you have, I have better players and a better scheme than whoever it is we're playing, I think you push that envelope.
I agree. I'm surprised that the Steelers only did 11 times. It seemed like they did it at least once a game last year. Yeah, I think they're going to go for it more and more, especially now with the where the extra point's been moved to. So it's not even 100%. You really don't even have to be 50% on it.
Right.
That 50% is probably winning.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. 2-2-2-2. Roethlisberger's right, especially with his team. They should go for it all the time. All the time. All right. That'll do it for Around the League. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. And then coming up still, Hal Hunter at 2:30, the Browns offensive line coach, to give his thoughts on the state of that position. It was one that, you know, people were very concerned about, but at the same time, I think people are going to be very pleased about it this year relative to how it performed in 2015. It's coming up soon on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. Time now for the mailbag on this Mailbag Wednesday. By the way, did you guys hear about the fact that Darren McFadden got hurt because he was attempting not to hurt his phone? He, like, was falling with his phone, and
yes,
instead of, like, putting his hand down with his phone or tossing his phone, he ended up landing on his elbow, and now he's hurt.
No, I did not hear that.
Yep.
That guy gets hurt enough as it is.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to be doing anything additional.
He's like, hey, Ezekiel Elliott, you want to start?
Here's the silver platter.
Let me help you.
And your career in Dallas is done. Thank you for playing.
Jeez.
I just had a guy that called in. He couldn't wait on hold. And he asked me a question, and I probably should know the answer to this, but unfortunately I didn't. So you're going to kick an extra point. Holder botches the extra point, is going to get tackled, you know, pitches it to the kicker. Kicker runs it, makes it somehow, runs it all the way back in. Is it 1 or 2 points?
2.
It is 2?
Yep.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. I wanted to verify that. So, sir?
2.
There you go. It's 2 points. All right, guys. Twitter mailbag. @Browns_daily. #AskCBD. The Menudo Man, our favorite tweeter. Random question, but how does Jesse Tuggle's kid look? Chances of him making the team?
We talked about it a little bit yesterday, both, you know, on and off the air with Andrew Gribble. And I think there are, what did he say, four guys competing for one spot, potentially?
Four for two, really.
So the and those individuals are Justin Tuggle.
Yep.
Dominique Alexander.
Scooby. And Tank Carter.
So, but they're happy with him. He's been taking reps with Tank Carter prior to the rookies getting here in the minicamps. He's still been running with the twos. And I think you got to throw another body in there. I mean, Joe Schobert's a guy who's, you know, potentially going to play some inside and outside linebacker. He may be an X-factor kind of guy or a package linebacker, but he's looking good. He's not, I mean, he's not, you know, overly gifted, but enough to not, you know, progress up the food chain or regress to have, you know, a job be handed to either Dominique Alexander or Scooby Wright.
I think that is something you are correct about. And what I've seen from Tuggle, very natural dropping in coverage, looks good there. We won't know about him, obviously, with the, you know, the run support until the pads really come on. But he's looked natural, good special teams player. I know that he's been working with Chris Tabor on special teams as well. So in the mix, and we'll see, competing to be a backup inside linebacker for the team.
All right, Sam tweets at the show, will there be a receiver this year with 5-plus touchdowns?
Yes. 5-plus touchdowns?
Listen, that hasn't happened very often for the Cleveland
Browns. I know.
It does not.
Corey Coleman's going to score 5-plus touchdowns.
Anyone else?
I think Corey Coleman can, and I think it's just wide receiver, so big play gear doesn't count, right?
Correct.
Last year, Travis Benjamin led the team with 5. In 2014, nobody had more than 3. In 2013, which was Gordon's big year, 9. You go back to 2012, nobody had more than 5. You go back to 2011, nobody had more than 5. You go back to 2010, nobody had more than 5. Jeez, this is depressing. 2009, exactly. Nobody had more than 5. 2008, nobody had more than 5. And most of these seasons, nobody had more than 3. 2007, Braylon had 16. So it's happened. You've had more than 5 receiving touchdowns by a wide receiver since 2008 through 2015 seasons once.
But you've also had more than 5 wins in how many of those seasons?
Not many.
So failure is failure.
Yeah, but in you would think for a team that's losing, you would get those fourth quarter garbage passing touchdowns and you'd put something up there. I think it speaks to the talent or lack thereof, the
correct
dearth of talent at the position. I do think that, though, Corey Coleman will go over 5 this year in the Hugh Jackson offense.
All right, guys, from Ben, what do you know about the progression of Nate Orchard and Xavier Cooper? What can you tell us after what you've seen over the last few months?
It's really interesting. We've kind of laid out who's going to start along that defensive line, and we've talked about Nassib and the role that he might play, but we've got a lot of questions about Xavier Cooper, and I think, we traded back into the third round last year to take him. We've heard about his quick step and his production and his ability to get to the passer. I think Xavier Cooper is not going to be a starter for this team, but he will start in some packages or be heavily rotated in passing-type situations until he can learn to really, hunker down and, and be a stalwart in there along the defensive line. But for right now, we're going to feature him. And Nate Orchard, I think he's a guy that I will even say that I kind of forget to talk about. And the reason why is because of Paul Kruger, the excitement that Hugh Jackson has brought back into his career. He's excited to go play Emmanuel Ogbah and the role that he will play. The playmaker we mentioned, as I said, the X-Factor guy, Joe Schobert, and where he's going to line up.
Yep.
Barkevious Mingo, now in his fourth year, not extending him with that fifth-year option. And then there's Nate Orchard, a guy that we took in the second round last year, highly productive out of Utah, came on towards the end of last year when given the opportunity, and I think he has an opportunity to grow into a role. What that role is, I don't know, because I would put our best players or our best pass rushers on the field first, and I can't yet say that he is over either Kruger or Ogbah until proven otherwise.
I think that's fair. I think that Orchard is a guy that is going to contribute. Last year, they thought he was his best against the run for those outside backers. Did have 3 sacks late in the season, so he's got to be able to build on that, and I know that the coaches think that he is off to a very good start in this defense. So he's a guy that I am looking at to contribute a lot. Xavier Cooper, I think, is a package player for now, but we'll have the opportunity. I don't think that it's set in stone that John Hughes will forever be in front
correct
of him, and I think that ideally they'd probably want him to be able to unseat him at some point going forward, and I know that right now you'd think that Carl Nassib is kind of the succession plan for Dez Bryant, but Dez Bryant is, I think, the best player on the D-line right now.
Yep.
All right, guys, from William, will anyone break double-digit sacks this season?
You know what? I'm going to say no. So if this were fact or fiction, I would say fiction. I believe that there isn't one guy that we're going to feature. They all have a skill set that Ray Horton likes, and they will play into their strengths. But as we just mentioned, multiple names, there's going to be a lot of bodies. It's not going to be the rotation we saw last year in last year's scheme, but it's like good players or those that can rush the passer will be out there. And I think we have multiple guys that can do it. And we're just going to use them better than we did last year. We're not going to rotate them just to rotate them. We're going to use them in different ways to gain an advantage.
This defense is going to also use a lot of disguise and trickeration in terms of who's going to be coming after the quarterback.
That will create unblocked or one-on-one situations.
And will create multiple people. I think we could have a bunch of people in the 4-6 or 4-7 range.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe not one guy that is the guy.
There might be one guy that's going to get close to double digits, but then, as you said, for that 4-6 range, it's a good window.
I mean, I think that you look at the linemen, Dez Bryant is going to lead the linemen in sacks, and I think in this defense, if they can isolate him, he's got a chance to get, north of 7. I think Kruger, Ogbah, Orchard, I think even a guy like DeMario Davis and Kirksey with their blitzing.
Well, you'd love
to
have those 3 first outside guys at minimum 5 plus. 5 each.
Oh, yeah.
Plus Ogbah, Kruger, Orchard. And then he said, you're going to get a sprinkling from Kirksey and Davis. We'll say three each. Shelton's going to steal one or two. Coop's going to steal, you know, one, two, three here. You hope Nassib maybe has, you know, three sacks. But lo and behold, those little numbers in volume start to add up to the production of a J.J. Watt with 21, and the next sacker has six.
Right.
You know, and that's just how we're going to play defense until Ray Horton can feature these players, and or Ogbuck, in his case, or Orchard, can grow into a feature rusher.
Right, that's the key. Get it. Listen, it's the total that matters. You don't need one guy.
Final question today, guys, from Phil. Interesting. Would LeBron James be a better wideout than Terrell Pryor?
Probably. He might be a safety. I mean, a tight end, though.
He played tight end at St. Vincent St. Mary, if I'm correct.
I think he would be a very good player. And I'll tell you what, the way that he anticipates passing lanes, could you imagine him as a free safety with his size and range and speed?
How about this? Who would you take, LeBron James at wide receiver or Nate Robinson at DB?
LeBron.
Thank you.
Or Russ. Russ would be a heck of a football player.
Get off of him.
Russ!
He's watching our Cavs play in the finals, just so you know.
Not because the Cavs beat him.
I'm not saying.
Watching the Warriors play in
the
finals.
It's okay. No, he's actually watching both.
Also true. All right, when we come back, Hal Hunter, the new Browns offensive line coach, your first opportunity to hear from him this year. Some very insightful answers he gives. Actually, a surprisingly good interview. Looks like a guy that you don't want to mess with when he's walking through the building, but a good interview, and we'll have that for you next.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Let's go to the podium now and hear from Browns offensive line coach Hal Hunter.
If he comes through as the starter, do you have an interior swingman who can serve as a backup center?
Well, the guy that it did in the past, I don't really know, but the guy that did in the past, I guess a couple years ago when Mac got hurt, was Greco. Mm-hmm. And Greco, we've had Greco do CQ exchange every single day out here. He's done a really good job of it. He's really functional at it. He's smart. He understands it. He didn't take any reps during the spring, but he'll get reps during the fall there at the center. I wanted him to, because it's a whole new system, I wanted him to have the opportunity to just focus in on right guard and just practice here at the position. But I have no question that he couldn't come in if he had to come in as a, you know, they dress maybe seven or eight guys. Right. Somebody's got to be the inside swing man.
My last question on this is the kid, Matthews, getting any reps at guard to potentially be a swingman?
No, he's been mostly focusing at center. I think there's so much going on at center right now. I think we've had him focus mainly there at center. And so he's gotten some reps, probably not as many reps as he'd like, but we've had a lot of guys working at center position. And so he'll get his opportunity in camp. You know, he's a tough kid. He's a smart kid, competitive kid, comes from good stock. Football is important to him. So I'll be anxious to see when we put the pads on and let him go.
What have you thought of right tackle?
Well, at the right tackle position, there's going to be a lot of competition at right tackle because you've got Alvin Bailey that came in. You know, you look at Alvin Bailey when he played last year, went in for Russell Okung at left tackle. He played really good. I was when they had me evaluate him, I was like, why am I wasting my time for? They ain't letting him go. Yeah. And then I was really excited when he came in here for the visit. Now, when he swings over to right tackle, all the technique is absolutely backwards. We've worked a lot on his technique, and our system is a lot more complicated than what they did at Seattle. So we're asking him to do a lot more, but he's picked it up really well, and I've been pleased. He's got a ways to go to be able to do what we want, but he's making progress. Spencer Drango has come in and kind of been a little bit of a surprise. He's been working the backup right tackle, picking up the offense good. He's a tough, competitive kid, fairly athletic. He's a four-year left tackler. We've gone to right tackles. We're now getting his technique, and he's gone in there, competed. He's still got a ways to go, but he's in there. Michael Bowie played a little bit of right tackle early in the spring, and he played some guard. Now, he's been finishing out the last couple weeks at left tackle. And then, of course, Sean Coleman. I mean, Sean Coleman was a really impressive guy at Auburn. We watched him on tape. And he reminded me a lot of a guy I had at San Diego named Marcus McNeil, who played for me early and was all pro for the first 2 years for me in San Diego. And Sean Coleman, they have a lot in common. And so Sean will be, he's be ready to go in fall camp. And so there's going to be a lot of guys competing at that position, which is good news.
Now, is in your scheme, is that the typical road grader right tackle?
Yeah, I think you got to be a little bit more of a run blocker. But both tackles got to run block. And anymore, like you could play Denver, man, they got two guys that can rush off the edge. Every time now you play, they always got two edge rushers. So both guys better be able to protect. But it's the old NFL. The right tackle's got to be a little bit more run-oriented, and the left tackle's got to be a little bit more pass-oriented. And so we've got a lot of guys that are going to have some run action at him. And I think that's the one thing that I liked about Sean when looking at him on tape was he was a real physical guy. Michael Bowie's a physical guy. Alvin Bailey, you know, that system up in Seattle, that's a run-first system up there, and he was physical in the run game. So we got some guys that I think are going to be physical in the run game. And, you know, like I told him, I said, it's not my job to figure out who's going to be the starting right tackle. It's my job to coach you guys as the best of my ability and let you guys figure it out. So I coach, you know, I'm gonna coach you to be the best you can be, and I'm gonna coach you to beat him out, and then let you guys do it on the field.
They brought in Kyle Shanahan's stretch zone run scheme a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. They kept up a lot of it last year. How similar is what you're gonna do this year to that?
Every offense has a little bit of zone scheme involved in it, but we're not one of those teams that it's just gonna be exclusively one or two. We do it all. I mean, we're man, we're zone, we're gap. I mean, we do it all right here, and so. To function in our system, you have to be able to do it all. There is some carryover with that type of zone scheme, that those techniques always carry over, and everybody, like I said, everybody has that within their system. But we're not an exclusive system like that. We do a lot of stuff.
Is that game plan specific or down and distance specific?
Both. Everything is always game plan and down and distance specific.
Does the personnel you have match what you
do? Yeah, personnel has. I bet our guys got to be able to do it all. Our guys can do it all. So I think that's the thing. Now, they, from the differences, they haven't done it all. I mean, that's what they give me that piece of paper in my mailbox every 2 weeks for, is to get them to be able to do it. But they have the physical and mental ability to do what we're asking them to do. Now what we need to be able to do, what we did over these last 2 months, and what we have to do when we come back to camp is to hone that in there. And again, I'll be anxious. A lot of our techniques can't be executed at full speed until we have pads on. That's just some of the stuff you can't do. I mean, it's hard to come off there and put your shoulder on somebody and put that face mask hit your shoulder and that ouches a little bit.
But when it comes to Mac was such a athletic guy. He just performed better in that stretch zone.
Yeah, he's athletic.
Irvin is not like his specialty would be.
He's a physical guy, but I'm gonna tell you what now, he gonna run like heck. I mean, he may be one of the most athletic centers I've. I mean, he's really really athletic. I'm not sure. As I think about all the centers in the NFL that I know of right now, I'm not sure that if I was gonna race a guy in a 40-yard dash, I might not put him. I put my money on Cam Irvin to win that one. Now, he can really run and change directions for a big, tall, high-cut guy. I mean, I think that's what everybody was so interested with him, because they felt he was athletic enough. We were looking at him at Indianapolis as a left tackle. That's not what we thought about his athleticism.
Even last year's coach said there were a few plays where he was overpowered.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, when you play the offensive guard position in this league against a really quality, I mean, that's tough now. Some of these defensive tackles, these three techniques in this league, they are men. And, you know, you look at some of the guys like the Atkins guy down at Cincinnati, McCoy down at Tampa Bay. You look at some of those guys can play now. I mean, those guys are really good players. And so to be a young rookie playing at the guard position, and, you know, when you're spending all week, you're playing left tackle one day, then you're playing some tight end, then you may be playing left guard, right guard, taking a little reps at center. It's, you know, it's doing it all, man. It's, at this level, you better hunker down in one position.
Hugh just said that Joe Bitonio has the potential to be one of the best players in the league, bar none. What has most impressed you about him, and what does he have to do to kind of take that step?
Well, in my past, you know, that's one thing. I coached the best left guard in the league at Indianapolis when Chris Dillon was playing left guard. He was a perennial All-Pro. And I've talked to Joe a lot about, he can pattern his game after Chris Dillon because he has a lot of the same characteristics. First of all, they are tough, tough, tough. I mean Joe has got real legitimate toughness. He's smart, he's competitive, and he can move his feet and run. So, I mean, I think you take a guy that's smart, tough, competitive, has some athletic ability. And I tell you one thing I like about him the best, you only have to tell him once. You tell him once, he's got it. You correct his technique one time, he's got it. And so he's not a guy that you've got to grind over and over again. Because, you know, a lot of these guys aren't blank tapes. A lot of these guys have other techniques or other things that they've done you're trying to change. But I think the competitiveness and the toughness, the work ethic combined with his He got some athleticism. I think he's got real potential. And again, I want him to try to pattern his game after those type of guys. You know, can he be a Chris Dillman type player? Yeah. Can he be a the guy that played for New England that went down to Tampa Bay?
Logan.
Can he be a Logan Mankins? Yeah, I know Logan. I know him personally. I mean, can he be that type of player? Yeah, he can be that type of player. But he's got to be able to do it. He knows he's not where he needs to be, but he knows where he wants to go.
That's Browns offensive line coach Hal Hunter, who, surprising, the guy's got the gift of gab.
He does. And I think it's just he probably doesn't enjoy spending time with the media and just wants to kind of give you a synopsis on every player. And I think that was very candid and honesty from the coach.
Yeah.
And also very positive, because I think he does have a good group of guys. And, and speaking of Cam, not a lot of made mention of Joe Thomas at all, but Betonio and what's going on at right tackle.
Yeah, and it seemed like he was pretty pleased with Alvin Bailey, and I thought it was an interesting, he's like, why am I even looking at this guy? They cut him. And then he said, I like his tape. I like what he can do there as he moves him to the right side. But he certainly has a lot of energy in his talks, not something you'd expect when you see him walking around the halls of Berea. I feel pretty good about this offensive line, and you can tell when they talk about Sean Coleman that they're very excited to see Sean Coleman out there with the pads on, and he will be ready to go for training camp. Do you think that as a rookie he can make up in training camp the ground that he's lost to Alvin Bailey by not being able to be there in the mini camp periods?
I would say no.
Okay.
And partially because, Sean Coleman's not only – he's got to get healthy first and foremost – enough so to be able to compete and get on the practice field. And then he's got to, go above and beyond to beat a guy out. And I just don't think from a timing standpoint and also from a trust standpoint with these coaches, because a coach builds trust with a player every day that they're out there. Meaning, they have the opportunity to pat on the back and reward a guy for a good series, a good practice, a good week. And then also you have an opportunity when you might not have a good day or you screw up a play, you build a bond when you go over, the coach puts his arm around you and coaches you through that or goes through it, on the whiteboard or in the film room, whatever it might be. And Sean Coleman's kind of missed that.
Yeah.
And so that's why there is practice, is because you just can't have mental reps. And I think that's where, and I don't want to talk about the past, but you got to go out and do it and play the game of football. You just can't talk about it on a whiteboard, watch it on film, and expect to go out or walk through it and then expect to go fast, hit hard, and execute if you've never done it full speed ever before. And I think that's why, so many players like myself or former players like myself are against that new season. We're in favor of being healthier, extending your career, making a lot of money, and decreasing the concussions, but you're also discounting what practice is, because that's your job. Perfect your craft. How are you going to play a game and knock somebody's head off or execute a certain technique that you're asked to do if you can't, and you heard it from Hal Hunter, do it in practice with pads on?
And you've got to. That's the only way to get better, and that's one of the reasons why Hugh Jackson said this year at training camp there will be more pads, there will be more hitting, and because the only way to get better at playing football is by playing football the way the game is actually played.
And you go old school, it's like, it's called tackle football. You're going to go play tackle football. And in football, called tackle football, you tackle people. You hit people. It has to happen for you to replicate what's going to happen on a Sunday. Otherwise, it's going to catch you off guard. And just like a player can come in and have to get into football shape, there's a mentality associated with hitting and being hit and proper technique and not proper technique. And you can play your way back into hitting and being hit and proper technique. But if you've done it all training camp long, you walk into your regular season ready for all that.
It becomes a little bit of second nature to you.
It does. This is the second time we've referenced that. Yeah. Does that seem like it's a repetitive process?
That's what you
want. If you
want
to perfect your craft, do it over and over and over and over and over again until you get it right.
Until it is second nature and you're not thinking about it.
Correct.
You're just doing it and executing. Just go. All right, we're going to take our final break here. Last chance if you want to tweet us or call us, 216-578-0850. You can tweet the show as well. At Browns _daily, at Nathan Segura, at BGSU Gibbs. We should have like a special one day where like people send in obscure stats for Gibbs to guess the stats. We should like get some crowd participation, Gibbs, don't you think?
I think that's a good idea. Good and terrible.
Yes. All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD, wrapping it up here on this Wednesday. And Wilhelm, I'm going to miss you. You're taking off for a couple days.
I am. It's going to be great. I'm going back to the promised land.
Going,
San
going,
Diego.
Back.
So my wife and two kids, we're going out to California. We leave tonight. I'll be home for probably 45 minutes before I shoot right back to this area to jump on a plane. We'll get there tonight. We're going to do Legoland tomorrow, which is a family favorite.
A land made out of Legos?
It is. It's fantastic. If you don't know about it, go find out. It's an amazing place. We're doing SeaWorld on Sunday for Father's Day.
Okay.
I've got a little bit of business on Monday with some NFL stuff, but going to catch up with some old friends, you know, hit some of the old stomping grounds.
Do you see any of your former teammates when you go out there?
I've tried. Just like here in Cleveland, guys, people have their opportunity to go, you know, to get out. I know, why would you leave San Diego?
Yeah, seriously.
But it's like it's your home, you know, 9.5 months out of the year. So people go, like, I'm sure like the Rivers family will go back to Alabama, you know, and see his parents. But I do communicate. You know, Eric Weddle was a guy who I know is building a house in San Diego, but of course signed via free agency with Baltimore. I'm missing him. I think he just left yesterday to be in Baltimore and you know, in their new house there and then vacation. So, but what's really cool is I developed some amazing friends outside of football, you know.
Yeah.
So, and our kids haven't seen each other since they were like 1, 2, 3 years old. So it's going to be really weird at first, but then, you know, they'll just start getting back in the moment.
Yeah.
And then it's like, they're just going to go off and we'll all catch up as adults, have some, you know, adult beverages and get on with the, you know, the good old days.
Absolutely. Well, certainly have a good time.
I will. Thank you.
By the way, the tweet that I was trying to reference earlier in the show, and then we got sidetracked on some other tangent, was that somebody said, they're talking about Oakmont, where the U.S. Open will be played. And
yes,
they said, I've heard it, the course described as a ball striker's dream. And then somebody said, Draymond Green must be fired up to play that course.
That's funny.
It was good. I liked
that is
it.
Good.
Did you like that, Gibbs?
I did. I also saw something about mail bag.
Ah, yes.
Being hit in the...
I don't get it.
Well, I don't want to go into more details, because then we'll be
so
in
So it's
meetings.
Over my head. Or between my legs.
Stop
and
it.
And we have a winner.
Stop it. Vacation. He's ready. Send this model on
so
his
wait,
way.
So wait, who's on tomorrow? I got golf league tonight, by the way. I'm playing the league champ. First time in like 5 weeks. I've
good luck. How good is he?
He's not horrible.
No, I know that, but I meant, is he a scratch? Is he
no.
a five?
No. No. He had a pretty high handicap, and that allowed him to win the title. He played some good golf at the right time.
Hey, it's one of the guys that you played against last
yeah,
weekend.
Yeah, seriously, down in Atlanta, those guys.
Yes.
Sandbaggers.
They Who's on you. Tomorrow?
What?
Who's on tomorrow?
Sir Andrew. And the kid's going to call in with a game four
we'll
or game
NBA
six preview.
Intensive tomorrow.
Yeah. The Mamba. Modern day Mamba.
Modern day Mamba.
As he calls Mike Kyrie Top. Irving. Yeah, he's very excited about the modern day Mamba right now.
Well, what's going to be very interesting for me, and I know we're running out of time here, is watching the Cavaliers most likely in a setting full of Golden State Warriors fans. And then again, not being in Cleveland with a game six here, and then them winning and still not being in Cleveland on Monday when they would potentially win an NBA title.
I know.
So, but I'll be back for the parade.
Maybe you guys should shoot up for game seven. Right up the coast, man. You're right there. Right there. Something to
I
think
got
about.
$10,000 to drop on a Cavs win. Sorry.
By the way, Richard Jefferson said today about Klay Thompson, if it's a man's game, shut up about Mozgov's screen.
Ooh.
Feisty. I like it. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. For Jason Gibbs and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850, WKNR, and I am out.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.